It's the month of rebrands. But I do have to say, a lot of these rebrands are being done to possibly just get some more mind share on these projects. Like, sure, these tokens have been around for so many years now, people forget about them.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join me, Ryan Stubbe, Director of Bitcoin Mining, alongside our team of experts, Jason Ward, the head of FCAT Blockchain and Crypto, Parth Gargava, head of digital asset startups in Fidelity Labs, and Jack Newrider, associate at F-Prime Capital. Every week, we roll up our sleeves and delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit the subscribe button for your weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are that of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently. Hey guys, good morning. Welcome back.
Same to you. Welcome back. It's going to be one we're releasing to the public, first time in a couple months.
Yeah, no, I know. It's been a couple of months of hiatus, but back and hopefully better than ever. more hot takes, more good discussion. So really excited to be here and, you know, marking the official end of the summer, I suppose. We can jump right in this morning. So there's a couple of things that we wanted to discuss. The first topic is around Mercurio, I think, and MasterCard creating a partnership around a debit card that enables you to spend crypto in your self-custody wallet, which is, you know, kind of a continuation of a topic that we have covered before. Two, you know, somewhat related stories are two pretty notable, or not pretty notable, very notable projects in the DeFi and L2 space, announcing the launch of new tokens, and that's Polygon launching a new token, as well as MakerDAO going through a pretty much broad rebrand and restructuring to what is now called Sky, with a new stablecoin and a new governance token. So we'll talk a little bit about that and kind of some of the implications and the master plan for Maker, now Sky. So with that, I think we can jump right in. And I know, Parth, you had something you wanted to talk about that you tried last week.
Yeah, I do. And so I was talking to you guys about, you know, this tragedy that I saw a few weeks ago. And along with that, I recently got some lab work done for myself. So everything looks great. But lately, I've just been thinking a lot about estate planning for my crypto. And I mean, not that I plan to leave you guys in a bit, but what happens, I always ask myself, what happens to my hard-earned crypto if I, you know, skydive and the parachute doesn't open? Like, how does my wife or my family use the crypto that I've hodled so painfully? And so, and the tricky part is that you don't have a lot of options, right? So we were talking about a few services, but it's so limiting that you can probably count a lot of them in your, like, there are probably three or four options that you have. Now, I found this awesome Bitcoin wallet called Liana, which has inheritance planning built into the wallet. So it is a Bitcoin wallet where you store your Bitcoins, and if you die, your beneficiaries or you know, someone who you select gets that Bitcoin. And the mechanism is pretty simple. The way they have it built in is that they have something called as Bitcoin time locks, which means that my wife, you know, gets a wallet address. And if I stop using my wallet or my address for more than 5 years, she automatically gets my Bitcoin. So it's really simple. All of this is enforced without the need for any sort of third-party service provider. And so I have full control of my Orange coins until, you know, I die, and then I can pass it on to my wife. The only caveat is that I do have to make one transaction every 5 years to sort of tell the address that, hey, I'm still alive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. And I mean, you know, the majority of the providers or services in the space already are a little bit more centralized, right? So they're in terms of how they would facilitate the, you know, transfer of assets to a beneficiary looks a little bit different, where here it seems like it's a little bit more programmatic in nature.
Yeah, absolutely. And even when you think about, again, I do have Some part of my wealth divided in a self-custody route and some with an exchange. Even with centralized exchanges, you don't really have a lot of options. Like they don't have, blog posts explaining here's what happens when someone dies and here's how you pass it on. But you can almost think about these smart wallets where you have a multi-spending path. Right. So if Ryan has a Bitcoin wallet, you can obviously transact. But if you don't transact for a while, then it goes to the second route. So you almost have to age your coins for, for 4 or 5 years, and then it goes on to someone else. It's actually funny because I tried explaining all of this to my wife, and she's like, "This doesn't work for me." So she doesn't want it. So I did go through, like, here's a Liana wallet. If I use it, would you be able to, like, would you control the wallet? And she's like, "Yeah, I don't want any responsibility of maintaining a wallet address." So I'm still figuring out what to do, but I think we have to build something which is way more family friendly.
There aren't many people crazy enough to take on, self-custody and key management,
I also feel like it needs to be more like default and like ingrained in the technology itself, because it's one of those things, like even for like traditional estate planning, like wills and all of those types of things, like I feel like people just don't, it's an uncomfortable topic. And also you just like assume like, hey, nothing's ever going to happen to me. I'm still young and I have time to figure that out. But like, obviously for some people that they don't end up having that time. And like, I'm guilt just as guilty of it as like I'm saying the general population is. But like, if you don't already embed it into these things ahead of time, then people won't have them set up. And
Yeah.
it's kind of the state that we're in right now, I guess, in crypto.
I think you're spot on. My plan before the end of Christmas is to make sure that I have a solid estate planning like plan for myself, and I'll keep you guys updated on how that's going.
Very uplifting. Okay. Let's move on. All right. So I think, Jason, let's start with the Mercurio or Mercurio. I'm not really sure which one, but an announcement out of MetaMask with the debit card that they had launched. This is yet another launch. I think this is an interesting topic that we've been kind of tracking for some time. So do you want to just maybe walk us through what exactly this announcement was and kind of what the implications are?
Yeah, I'm happy to. And I think it sort of picks up on that self-custody thread that we started with. But this one's a little bit more fun. We're talking about how to spend your crypto as opposed to how to pass it on to others who will clearly spend it, regardless of what your plans were. So Mercurio is one of Europe's fastest growing startup companies. And they have recently announced, just last week, in fact, announced Mercurio Spend, which is a new euro dollar denominated debit card that lets users spend crypto from their self-custody wallets. And basically what it does is it's an automatic conversion of the crypto that they choose to spend into the euro dollar for spending. And that's enabled through this collaboration with Mastercard. So we talk about the difficulty in managing keys or the friction that you experience with estate planning. There's often been discussions around how one of the main use cases that crypto was designed for, which peer-to-peer payments, is also sometimes riddled with friction. And taking on this approach of partnering with a card provider and using some traditional rails integrated with blockchain rails, they're really making it easier for people to spend their crypto. And they're not the only company after this. But one of the nice features about this particular product, Mercurio Spend, is that it integrates directly with Apple Pay and Google Pay. So for those of us who just walk up to a point of sale machine and use our Apple Pay or Google Pay today, it's the same experience. You can just spend your crypto as opposed to your fiat. So pretty nice. I think Mercurio's been focused on facilitating both on and off ramping to crypto. Their press releases say that they've been supporting 7 million users to date with their various products. So still a young company, but they've been around for, I think it's since about 2018. So you need to check me on that one. But I, as a crypto enthusiast, wanted to know, how do you actually spend your crypto directly? So what's happening behind the process? And it seems that the user is actually triggering the sale of crypto if they don't already have a fiat balance on the MasterCard. So I said, well, how do you actually sell your crypto? And Mercurio, independent of this app, which I assume these one or more of these features will be integrated with the Spend product. Mercurio has an exchange website where you can transact crypto. They also have a wallet where you can buy and sell crypto directly, as well as a mobile app. So users choose whichever card that they want to be receiving the proceeds from a sale of crypto. So it could be to this Mercury Spend, or it could be to another card. But I also dug into which networks this new product is compatible with, and it's Ethereum, Solana, Near, ZK Sync, Polkadot, Ton, and a couple of others. So this is really focusing on users who are right now inside the EU, but it's a complement to another engagement that MasterCard had announced last month, which was with MetaMask. So kind of interesting. I can tell you guys a little bit more about that MasterCard and MetaMask engagement as well. But I think the interesting aspect here is that they're addressing a job to be done. And that job is to make accessing and utilizing your crypto on a day-to-day basis easier.
Yeah, no, that's a great overview. Thanks, Jason. I guess kind of what jumps out at me with this, you know, and there's some similarities with the other and, you know, recent kind of crypto debit card announcements is the fact that, the crypto is effectively being liquidated to fiat to facilitate these payments, right? What will be interesting is over time, if you can enable the merchants to select whether they want to receive, you know, crypto or fiat on their side, and that you could still use these cards to actually facilitate that transfer, right? Because obviously, I think now we have fairly strong offering in the space that enables you to liquidate your crypto and spend it in a relatively frictionless way. You know, we have payment providers on the crypto side that enable you to pay in crypto, you know, over solutions like Lightning if you're using Bitcoin, right? But I think an integrated solution where the user and the recipient have more flexibility with, you know, what's going on in the back end with regard to the currency that they're transacting in is something that probably is still a need that needs to be addressed in the market.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on with that. And I think that the company looks, or these companies look at that as the aspirational outcome and the current offering as a stepping stone. So we do know that some merchants accept crypto today. We know that in some countries, crypto has been adopted as a legal tender, a form of legal tender. And in those areas, some of the merchants are forced to take crypto. So then they have it's on them, to your point, whether or not they choose to convert or hold in fiat. But one of the things I really like about this is there's almost, if not 100 million, I've seen different reports, over 90 million or over 100 million places where MasterCard is accepted globally. So you talk about the actual ability to penetrate the market and partnering with one of these traditional financial services players with the card network like MasterCard or even Visa. Visa has a relationship with a company called WireX where they're doing something similar. You're just basically making it so that users have a seamless experience. And I dug in a little bit into what MasterCard calls their Engage program. And they have a program where they're looking to bridge Web 2 and Web 3 and essentially create new crypto card offerings. So really going to where the market is going. And that was also reflected in their collaboration with MetaMask. You know, the things that I found that were interesting about that particular collaboration is that there's a pilot. It's a few thousand digital-only cards for users in the EU and the UK. But those users need to hold their crypto on the Linea network. And they have to work to set spending limits. But same type of thing, that when the crypto is spent, it's converted from crypto to the fiat for settlement. But they've been working with a UK payments firm called Banx. That's BAANX, which is overseen by the FCA. And that partnership is MetaMask, Banx, and MasterCard. But Banks also seems to be a rising or an interesting growing company. They just closed a $20 million Series A in Q1 of this year. So again, you're seeing in geographies or jurisdictions like the EU and UK where they have more clear rules that these pilots in this activity is taking off.
Yeah, I mean, my take on all of this, I'd love to see experimentation from MasterCard, Visa, from the incumbents of the payments world that we live in today. I struggle to see how integrations of like enabling people to spend their Ethereum or Solana will create mass adoption of crypto as payments rails. Like, I understand, you know, stable coins, but even then, like, I don't know, I guess in order for people to adopt an alternative from like a legacy system that they're used to, the experience and the offering has to be like an order of magnitude better, right? Like 10 times better. And so sure, for like a niche group of crypto users, maybe these types of things are useful, but to the broader audience, right? Like, I struggle to see how this makes the experience and use like way less costly, way better, way faster for all parties involved. And also, I also struggle to see on the crypto side, like as a crypto user, if I buy Ethereum or Solana, like I'm thinking about those as an investment that I think will appreciate over time, right? Versus like the barbell of like my cash and my checking and savings account that I'm spending. And I'm not necessarily looking for someone to enable me to be able to spend those. I don't mean to sound super bearish on it, but I feel like we've seen quite a few of these. And it always kind of comes back to like, well, see, crypto doesn't work, right? Like, didn't Tesla do like, oh, you can buy, you know, your Tesla in Bitcoin, and then nobody really ended up doing it. And I think they kind of scrapped the whole thing. And it was like, well, that's not really what Bitcoin is for, at least initially anyways, right?
So I hear you, and I don't disagree with you, but I also think that when you view this through the lens of someone that doesn't live in a first world country, then it becomes a lot more appealing. And that's what I typically try to go back to, is that when you're talking about the order of magnitude better, it's from where you're starting that you make that determination.
Well, so what type of infrastructure are you looking to kind of, you know, best, right? And I think if there's a lack of infrastructure, well, then it's a much different discussion. But I do agree with you, Jack. Like, I think like when you think about, you know, crypto assets, you know, like Bitcoin and Ethereum, Solana, you know, I still sometimes struggle to see the medium of exchange kind of value proposition, right? Because that's, again, taking a you know, developed economy point of view, it's not, you know, it's not really what we've kind of seen so far.
And I think this is where you're going, but it's why stable coins become so much more useful. Like, that becomes the medium of exchange. You know, they may run on networks that have a native currency that is more for speculation, or, you know, powers the engine, so to speak, if you're using it to pay transaction fees. But I agree with you guys. And it's really just about what is the job that people are trying to get done and what are the options in front of them.
Yep. Yep. All right. Let's switch gears a bit. So let's start by talking a little bit about MakerDAO rebrand to Sky and kind of some of the other changes that were made as part of this broader shift towards their, you know, quote unquote end game plan. Jack, do you want to talk a little bit about what some of these changes were, and I guess more importantly, why they're being made now?
Yeah, for sure. So MakerDAO, I'm sure many people are familiar with. We've talked about it a lot here. One of the largest DeFi protocols, one of the oldest DeFi protocols. They're the issuer of the DAI stablecoin, which is like a collateralized stablecoin that you can use on chain in various DeFi protocols. They just announced a rebrand to Sky. And so the Maker token can be converted over to the Sky token, and the DAI stablecoin can be upgradable to a new stablecoin called USDS. That's an optional upgrade that can be made on these tokens. So you're not being forced into these upgraded tokens. There's a few like I guess, nuanced details where, you know, the token will be redeemable at the maker token for the Sky token will be redeemable at a 1-to-24,000 ratio. So they're redenominating because the maker token trades at, like, I think today, like $1,600. And so they're redenominating. It's like a stock split in a way, or like a token split, to maybe garner additional interest in people wanting to, you know, own the token. They're trying to, you know, sort of rebrand and hope to get more people involved in the governance of the protocol. And really all of this is part of what Rune Christensen, who founded and is deeply involved in the Maker ecosystem, calls the end game, where they'll essentially have this whole ecosystem of various on-chain applications that live within the Maker ecosystem that operate as their own independent sub-DAOs. And you can create this, like, sort of decentralized system of applications that all are, you know, using this stablecoin as sort of core to the infrastructure. And yeah, part of the upgrade additionally, which they sort of didn't mention, and the reason why I think we're seeing sort of mixed takes on whether or not people like this upgrade or don't, is that, you know, there are various, like, VPN detectors or blockers to block certain people from using the new stablecoin that didn't previously exist for DAI. There's also, like, freeze capabilities or functionality that a centralized issuer like Circle or Tether is able to use, that's also being added into this new stablecoin USDS. So some people are saying, well, you're starting to look a lot more like these centralized stablecoins. What's even the point of having this decentralized stablecoin? And then additionally, other people are also saying, like, there's all these network effects and everybody knows MakerDAI and DAI, or MakerDAO and DAI. Why bother, you know, ruining those potential network effects, requiring DeFi applications to integrate these new tokens when you already have large liquidity pools with DAI and with Maker? So it's sort of met with mixed reviews, but part of a broader end game plan that Maker has been planning for a while now.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, the MakerDAO has been around a really long time, you know, at least in terms of, you know, DeFi, right? And what was interesting to me, you know, certainly the you know, rollout of new tokens for governance and stablecoin is very notable, as you pointed out. But the introduction of the sub-DAOs is also interesting to me, right? Because we know Maker's been extremely active in, you know, a number of spaces, particularly in the investment of treasury funds into real world assets, right? And, you know, I know a lot of people are knocking this as you know, additional layers of complexity in terms of how the DAO is run, but in the spirit of, you know, again, planning for that end game and planning for future activities, it's, you know, to me, it feels like a diversification and a separation of duties kind of across a grouping of entities, right? It kind of is starting to feel like a conglomerate, right? In the way that it's run, you know, with the DAO, you know, the MakerDAO still being kind of Sky being the parent, right? With these sub DAOs kind of, you know, working in specific areas on behalf of the parent. So it's interesting to me. Like, I think it's actually complicated, but it feels like in the long run, it could be, you know, quite a sophisticated way of thinking about the management of the DAO. Separate from all the issues that you mentioned with the stablecoin, because I you know, I think some of those things are those concerns are definitely legitimate.
They're also running into these, like, principal agent type conflicts where you have these sub DAOs that exist, or, you know, are sort of being pulled in as part of Maker, and they're all going to be their own separate entities with their own separate tokens. So, like, Spark is a DeFi lending front end for the Maker protocol. They're going to be the first like sub-DAO in the Sky protocol. They're calling the sub-DAOs Stars. So all this rebranding is, like, galactic, I guess. But they're going to have their own token and their own token airdrop for this Spark token. And it's just interesting when you think of, like, value accrual mechanisms. Like, what does that mean for, like, the Maker Sky token when all these sub-DAOs have their own tokens, but they're a part of this one unified ecosystem? There's a lot of, like, different interests that exist. And it's something that I think Maker has always kind of dealt with trying to deal with decentralized governance and coordination and incentives, but they're going to probably continue to have to deal with moving forward.
I feel like a lot of people are saying you know, their brand had serious value and Maker just, you know, blew it up. You don't really see it that often that you fully rename a working product. But I also do speculate, back to your point, Jack, that maybe Maker realized that the demand for a crypto native stablecoin has saturated and people are more gravitating towards a centralized stablecoin. There's now billions of dollars in USDC and Tether. And so maybe there's a huge untapped market to bring traditional finance on chain. And that's why you're seeing, you know, this rebrand to Sky to almost appeal to TradFi, to institutions, and then sort of build the best money application on chain where you can save, you can spend. But the idea would be to get DeFi native yields, but also get traditional finance yields from possibly treasuries or somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly none of us are, you know, marketing experts, but.
Well, and we're not involved in like the day-to-day management of Maker either, right? Like, and I think that's the piece that I'm kind of, I think, still digesting a bit, right? Because Jack, as you pointed out, like at Reparth, you pointed out, like, you don't just kind of make a pretty seismic shift in your identity as a brand and your structure and the way you operate without good reason, right? And that's why I think, like, to give, you know, benefit of the doubt, like, you know, they are doing pretty sophisticated things. They have been around a while. Like, there may be other things, you know, in their kind of long-term operating roadmap that necessitated this change. And, you know, maybe it's better to make this change now than 5 years from now when things are even more complicated than they have been, right? Or not. I don't know, right? I'm just thinking, you know, I'm just trying to think through all of the possible, you know, reasons why you would want to do this or need to do it, more importantly.
And maybe as a core, not exactly a core member, but as a contributor of the MakerDAO, as someone who does participate in a lot of these discussions, I do feel like, you know, a lot of times the logic given on the rebrand was just that it's going to be more cleaner and more genetic. Like, that's one of the comments. And when I saw that, I'm like, maybe I don't have the aesthetic eye to understand that MakerDAO does not sound as cool as Sky, or Sky is probably more genetic or more TradFi friendly. But it's, to me, just, I think the whole NGT, just splitting your Maker token into 24,000, that possibly makes sense because you want to almost democratize, you want more participants to start, you know, being a part of these DAO discussions. But having a new website, new logo, almost treating that as a new project didn't fully make sense to me.
I mean, I won't comment on any of the details, but we do think about it. One of the main aspirations of MakerDAO, as has been communicated since its founding, is to be truly decentralized. So you really wonder, like, are these actions to achieve that principle? And they're choosing it now. They're not commenting on the how, but the why. I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But back to you, Ryan.
So yeah, in our last few minutes here, I think the last story we wanted to cover was around Polygon, right, Parth? So they also have announced a new token and kind of switching things around in terms of how they operate. So you want to talk a bit about that, and again the reasoning behind it.
It's Ryan, it's the month of rebrands. But I do have to say, a lot of these rebrands are being done to possibly just get some more mind share on these projects. Like, sure, these tokens have been around for so many years now. People forget about them. They think about the new meme coin on pump.fun. Like, how do I get that attention back? But anyway, so Polygon team is the original team that helped scale Ethereum in 2017 before any of these L2s began. And they had a token called Matic, which you could use on a side chain. So in the same way as Solana has Sol as its gas token, Ethereum has ETH as its gas token, Polygon has Matic as its gas token. And all this while, Matic was being used to secure one single chain, which is the Polygon chain. Now, with the new Pol token, the idea of the Pol token is to secure multiple different chains that are now becoming a part of something called as ag layer, right? Aggregation layer. Now, the idea, think about aggregation layer as the connective tissue around all ZK chains. And we can, you know, do a special episode purely focused on aggregation and their thesis. But the idea is that it's almost, think about aggregation layer as the IBC that you see in Cosmos. I think like one, you know, hub which goes into different chains. And some of their launch partners are, you know, Immutable, Ronin, OKX has a chain called XChain, so and Ton, which came out of Telegram. So a lot of these chains would all be part of the ag layer, where you would get this seamless experience of transacting from one chain to another. And, you know, we've spoken a lot about how the biggest issues in the last 5 or 6 years in crypto were A, scalability and interoperability. Scalability has been, you know, has been slightly solved now with L2s. And I think interoperability becomes the biggest issue since you have a lot of this money liquidity in silos. And ag layer is possibly one of the most real solutions for tackling that.
So you hit on it briefly, but there's also going to be impacts on kind of the kind of POS scheme, right? With this upgrade, like what is the new token kind of get you that you didn't previously have with Matic?
Yeah. And again, a lot of these things are still being ironed out. But the TLDR is that the POL token can be used across multiple chains, where you can validate using the POL token across multiple chains. And you can also use the POL token in different ways outside of just pure validation. So you can use that for, you know, data availability committees. It can be used for it can be used for restaking. It's a whole new suite of activities that you can do with the POL token.
And that's a capability that we've seen pop up in other projects as well, where they want to be able to secure multiple chains using one token. Or, you know, remember back in the day, people would talk about merge mining and proof of work, but you're really just talking about, like, in some cases, how can you drive more economic value from securing the chain, particularly when transaction fees may be reduced over time due to scalability being solved incrementally?
Yeah, I think the biggest problem that they're trying to solve is that today, if I want to use an application on base chain, but I have money on Arbitrum, how do I get my money from Arbitrum to base, which means I have to go through a bridge or I could use an exchange. The idea of Polygon, or the idea of ag layer, is to simplify that entire process. And then, you know, all that network security is done by the POL token.
Yeah, no, it'll be certainly an interesting thing to watch. And I mean, it'll be also interesting to see if other projects follow suit, right? Because it kind of does feel like we have a little bit of a trend emerging here. And to your point, Parth, like, I wonder, like, you know, we're coming out of a market cycle, or I guess we're really out of it, but the last market cycle, like, a lot of the industry, a lot of these projects are pretty beleaguered, right? Like, are they trying to position themselves for kind of the next run, right? And next phases of growth. I think that's really the key question, and something we'll absolutely be tracking as we move forward. So I think that's all the time we had today. Thank you guys for the discussion. It was great to be back, and looking forward to, you know, future recordings. And thanks everyone for joining this week, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a great rest of your week.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets, nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.